Listen to the sound of men shaving their balls before the age of Manscaped. Yeah! Those screams are a thing of the past thanks to Manscaped. No more cuts and nicks with the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, featuring advanced skin-safe technology so you keep your bad boys nice and smooth. The battery will last up to 90 minutes so you can take a longer, more satisfying shave. So many people have written in stories about how the Lawnmower 3.0 has changed their lives. They even included pictures so I could see the smoothness for myself. They aren't kidding. You need to try this out for yourself. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code VSIN at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. 20% off, free shipping to manscaped.com. Use the code VSIN. Your partner and your balls will thank you.
This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSIN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
Jeff Sherman of the Westgate Superbook tweeted, if the NBA returns and goes right into their regular playoff format, here's what the first-round series prices would look like. Milwaukee would be a $20 favorite over the Orlando Magic at plus 4,000. Toronto minus 700 favorites over the Brooklyn Nets plus 500. Boston and Philadelphia both minus 110. Indiana plus 180 against Miami, the $2.20 favorite. The Los Angeles Lakers, a $15 favorite over the Memphis Grizzlies, plus 2,500. Dallas plus 550. The Clippers minus 800. Denver and Houston first round series price. The Denver Nuggets, $1.25 favorite against the Rockets. And Oklahoma City, $1.40 underdog against Utah, minus 160. If the NBA returns and goes right into the playoffs, it's according to Jeff Sherman at the Westgate Superbook. Taking a look at the Stanley Cup playoffs first round series. If they went straight to the playoffs when they return, Blue Jackets, a $3 dog against Boston, minus 400. Toronto, plus 200 against Tampa Bay, the $2.50 series favorite. Capitals, a $1.90 favorite against Carolina. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, both minus 110. Nashville, plus 150. St. Louis, a $1.80. Dallas, plus 135. The Avalanche, minus 155. Vegas, a $2.20 favorite over Winnipeg. And Edmonton, a $1.20 favorite over even money Calgary. This weekend on the Lombardi Line with VSiN host and former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, ESPN's Ed Werder discussed the Dallas Cowboys.
The hope is that they're going to be a much better coach team under Mike McCarthy than they were under Jason Garrett, because I don't think, in terms of the personnel they put on the field, they're likely to be as talented, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Look at the players that they've already lost in free agency. You know, Byron Jones, Robert Quinn, you know, their best sacker, their best coverage guy. So I don't think they can replace those with better players. And so it's going to have to be the way they approach the game defensively from a philosophical point of view, being a more aggressive type of team, a team that could create more turnovers. To me, the biggest failure on this team last year was special teams, right? They tolerated a kicker who missed 10 kicks in 13 weeks before they finally replaced him. And by then it was too late. I mean, how many games did they lost like six games last year where they missed one or more field goals? And they were slow to react.
ESPN NFL reporter Ed Werder on the Dallas Cowboys, who are plus 110 to win the NFC East. They signed Greg the Leg Zuerlein this weekend, 3 years, $7.5 million. Zuerlein hit 82% of his field goals in 245 attempts in 8 seasons with the LA Rams. He was 24 of 33 last season on field goals, 72.7%, and made 42 of 42 extra point attempts. Cowboys already have Kai Forbath on the roster, so those two will compete for the kicking job. Cowboys 14-1 to win the Super Bowl. Make a risk-free bet on VSIN with the VSIN Plus free subscription from now until 7 days after a major sport returns. Get Point Spread Weekly, VSIN's digital magazine, 24/7 live video stream of VSIN programs and replays, and much, much more. For details on the VSIN Plus free subscription, go to VSIN.com. With your action update, I'm Mike Sennett.
Get the latest VSIN odds at VSIN.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
Check out the VSIN store for the latest and greatest in sports betting fashion. We have more than 40 shirt designs, including our most popular one. Cash in tickets is what it's all about. Then there's the latest addition to the VSIN store, the Bookmaker Blonde collection of shirts and hats. You'll find VSIN shirts and hats for any occasion, and they're all made to order, so you can find the right design, color, and size perfect just for you. Are you recovering from a bad beat? We have a shirt to make you look better than you feel. Burned by some late scoring? Maybe you should wear this shirt as a reminder. It's not under until it's over. And if you're a fan of a particular VSiN show, we have a shirt for you too. You'll find VSiN hats and even VSiN coffee mugs all in our online store. Just go to VSiN.com/store and order now. That's VSiN.com/store. Best of all, it's open 24/7, so you can shop whenever you feel like shopping. Just head to VSiN.com/store. That's VSiN.com/store.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Monday morning to you from San Francisco. It's Gil Alexander. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo Sling and Game Plus. Thanks for joining us this morning for part number three of the Chris Andrews Storytime Special, where we cull together all the story, not all the story times really, but as many of the highlights of story times from years gone by on the Beating the Book podcast and from a numbers game, and try to put it in audio form back to back to back, because honestly, what better time ever is there to have done this than now in these strange times? Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're with your loved ones. And that voice you hear in the background is that of the South Point Hotel Casino Sportsbook Director, Chris the Andrews, my Mishbucha. Good morning, Chris. How are you, man?
What's going on, pal? I'm doing okay. Yep. Doing fine. You know, I joked about it last week. I'd make a great prisoner. And, I'm reading, writing, and watching a lot of TV. So that's my day. And in this day and age, I guess that makes you like a hero or something like that. So, I'm doing fine.
Good. Glad to hear you. And again, if a distraction is what we can create for folks, then I think we're doing our job over here today. We'll go through some of the great stories. And really, these aren't stories to start the show with today so much as they are that sort of segment that we had on top of stories, which was Adventures in Bad Bookmaking Through Your Years. Again, the book is Then One Day, 40 Years of Bookmaking in Nevada. That's where all these come from. And you started out, could you remind folks what the first couple Adventures in Bad Bookmaking we left off with last Wednesday?
I can't remember. What did we talk about last Wednesday? Oh, my God.
Hockey teasers.
That's one that has touched so many people, and I hear about that all the time. Dave Koken, he kind of reminded me of it last week. He wanted to know, whatever happened to the guy that was booking the hockey teasers? I would venture to say he's probably not in the business anymore. But I get those kind of notes every once in a while from guys. Yeah, that seems to have struck a lot of people. Are we talking about Roxy giving the numbers to a guy? This is way, way long ago when the Ivy League was still. It wasn't a bunch of white guys shooting set shots, but it wasn't far from that. And before the shot clock and the 3-point line, and he was giving them totals like 97, 98, 92. And the guy thought it was 197 and 198 and 192. And, obviously, that guy, I don't think he stayed in business too long after that either. But those are a couple of the ones that I mentioned last week. But we got a whole bunch of others because I've been in this a long time. And I've seen some really bad bookmaking over the years. And we're going to hit on some of those today.
Well, and those of us who weren't around for that, we shake our heads and we're like, wow, I wish that kind of stuff would exist today. Because if it happens today, they sort of like, your bet is nullified and forget you kind of thing. No real sustained errors like that. Can we do the old, let's start with the Stardust opening lines. I know you have a story around that.
Okay, so this would be like kind of towards the late 80s. Mid to late 80s, and this is when Scott Scheller, who, by the way, preceded me at Cal Neve, I took over for Scott, and Scott and I have certainly been friendly over the years. You know, we're not like real close or anything, but we've had a relationship. I like Scott. He's a good guy. Anyway, Scott really did a lot of things to move this industry forward when he was at the Stardust. And he would open the line on Sunday night at the Stardust. And it was kind of considered at the time like the opening number. And, you know, there was no internet, no Chris, no Pinnacle, nothing in the Caribbean, none of that crap. You know, so Scott's line was the opening line. And it was a madhouse to get to the window when Scott put up the numbers. And he put them up, and they had a lottery. And, like, you know, you were number one line or number 14, or, you know, whatever it was. They had to get a line, show them your lottery number, and you had to make three bets and go to the back line. So this was kind of a stock market, I would say, that sort of frenzy. And so I had a guy in Reno, and I don't want to mention who he is or where he worked, because guys would figure out exactly who he is. But, you know, we always get, there's so many opinions in this business, and some are like sort of right, some are partially right, and some are like way, way off. Anyway, a lot of guys would say, well, that opening number is as good a number as anything else in the world. And I would always say, you know, yeah, it was when Bob Martin was making the line. But, you know, it was a whole different world back then. We didn't have this kind of information. Not that Bob's line wasn't great. Bob was, you know, that was the Bible. When Bob put out a line like seven, that was the number. Trust me, that was, and if it went one way or the other, you know, if you went back to Bob's number, you were doing fine. But it wasn't like that anymore. You know, the whole world had changed. Everything had changed. But I still had some guys who believed that that opening number was as solid a number as you could possibly get. And this guy evidently was one of them. So Scott would open the line. I want to say like about 7 o'clock on Sunday night, and he would open the line the next day on Monday morning at about 11 with Scott's opening number, not the number that got batted around. So some of these games moved 4, 5, 6 points. You see how it goes in college football. I mean, pros, you know, even pros can move like a point, maybe a point and a half. And that's a key move in the pros. But in college football, games would move like crazy. Well, he would open Scott's original number, the original number he posted on the board. So I was getting I got naturally all the updates, you know, what Scott opened and what the games had moved to. And, you know, so by like 11 o'clock, and not everybody, there's like one other guy, and I see him around Las Vegas right now. There's one other guy that kind of knew this. And I would be there at 11 o'clock when he opened the numbers. And, you know, by like 11:30 or noon, I was like done for the week with all my action, you know, because I got to bet, you know, any opening numbers that I wanted. And then sometimes I agreed with the move, and then I would just, you know, not play, or, you know what I mean, maybe come in and bet the other way or whatever it was, you know. So I was like a kid in a candy store. And, you know, eventually this guy got fired. It cost me quite a bit of money. And he was replaced actually by a friend of mine. So, like, the gravy train had left town. But this guy did some unbelievable things. The other one that he did, so, I mean, the football was, you know, I made just a ton of money. Yeah, like I said, just got to bet into stale numbers for like a pretty decent limit. I think he was taking, I know I was betting a dime a game, and it was probably about all he was taking. But it really was like a lot of gravy. But the other thing that he would do that shows you how sharp he was, he would put up like the go, don't go on fight, but he would put up two different numbers. Like he put up 7.5 rounds. And, you know, over was the favorite. And he put up 9.5 rounds. And then under was the favorite. Well, he was letting us parlay. You could parlay the over 7.5 to the over 9.5. And
wow.
For those of you guys that can't, you know, if you're not quite figuring out, Yeah, if it goes 9.5, it already went 7.5. So you're betting, you were making one bet, essentially getting paid for two of them. This went on for like a couple years. And we had, there was another friend of mine who was in there doing the same thing. And sometimes we would just split it, he would tell me, he goes, well, I'm going to bet both of them under. I'd say, well, okay, I'm going to bet both of them over. And like, whatever we make, we would split, it's not like you'd make a fortune. You wasn't taking a ton of money on these things, but it was good. Every time there was a fight, it was good for, at least a couple hundred bucks in your pocket. There wasn't that much risk, really. I mean, if it came eight rounds, you could lose, one unit, or actually lose the parlay, I should say. So it wasn't risk-free, but God dang, it was one of those things where you're making essentially a straight bet and getting paid for a two-team parlay. And it was a lot of gravy in there too. And I just remember one day, I was making the bet, and he just kind of looked at me and goes, wow, I guess if it goes 9.5, it already went 7.5, huh? I said, I didn't realize that. Yeah, okay. that particular gravy train stopped right then and there. But we had plenty others going. That's just the kind of bookmaker he was. And he's actually had a pretty decent career as a somewhere in like the political realm. So that, again, that'll tell you what kind of realm that is too. So that was story number one. I got that Scott's opening numbers, like 14, 15 hours after they were posted. And guys at the Stardust were killing each other. There's even a story one time of a guy pulling out a gun to get in line to bet. I said, man, if I'm pulling out a gun, I'm going to be robbing somebody. I don't want to be giving them my money, because that's pretty much what he was doing.
Well, he kind of was robbing someone, just not you with the gun, right?
Probably.
Yeah. But wait, so hold on now. So those boxing, and you can't even call those, I mean, can you even call those correlated parlays? I mean, those are right on top of each other. So they're as correlated as anything gets. How long did it last for? How long would you say that you had the opportunity to bet those before? And I guess what you're suggesting is he was standing right over your shoulder and that's what ended it, because he finally figured it out?
Well, yeah, the boxing parlays, and I would say the Stardust opening numbers. The Stardust opening number thing lasted like two full football seasons. Jeez. I mean, like I said, they didn't take big action, but they took like a dime, and that's about all I was betting at the time. Yeah, I'd bet a little more if I had a chance to get a good number or something like that. But I mean, when you had that kind of gravy, I didn't have that big of a bankroll to bet every game that I liked. There was a lot of gravy out there. Like I said, you had guys, almost killing each other to get in line at the start. So, I'd walk out of there on a Monday with, 20, 25 plays sometimes, It was just the biggest gravy train you could ever imagine. And I was keeping track of my action at the time. And when my friend did go in there and replace this guy, I told him, I said, I hope you do okay, but I want you to tell him, I want to tell you how much money you cost me by you getting this job. Because he was way too sharp to ever do anything that stupid. He just wasn't going to do that.
Jeez. And what year again? What years again?
These were mid to late 80s. Mid to late 80s. Probably I'd say like 86, 87, like right in there, right about in there. Yeah. Man. But, you've seen that a lot, Gil, with anytime a new industry, and it was still sports betting, especially like in the casinos, was still like a relatively new thing. We still had the guys like from the old, Vegas veterans will know, from the old Churchill Downs, Santa Anita, the Hollywood downtown, the Saratoga. I mentioned Bill Darks, Del Mar a couple of times. Now, those were a lot of, crusty old bookmakers that really knew what was going on. But a lot of, these casino executives, and I wrote it in the book, a lot of times they said, well, look at this guy. He's a nice guy. He reads the sports page every day. He'll just get the numbers and, we'll be fine. He looks good. He wears a tie. His shoes are shined. And
he'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll have him be our sports book manager. Yeah, everything will work out just fine.
And just to give some context, Chris, to those days, because for those who aren't aware of Vegas in those days, and by the way, great shots at VSiN.com and the VSiN app of old Vegas. Shout out to our producer today, Danny Burke, for helping to put those up. The sports books, we all take it for granted now that sports books are inside casinos. But in those days, just to paint a picture, those were standalone sports books that had, by and large, the names of horse racing tracks. Is that how it was, generally speaking?
Mostly, yeah. There was a couple that were not. Like I said, there was the Hollywood downtown. But other than that, I'm trying to think of some of the guys. There was, you know, the Hollywood, which is the old Hollywood racetrack. There was Del Mar, the Santa Anita, Churchill Downs. Oh, man. I'd have to, you know, I'd have to look back. There was one, the Rose Bowl, which obviously is not a racetrack. You know, but that's kind of where... that's where most of the names came from. And back in those days, really the room was mostly dedicated to horse players. You'd go in and the sports side was very small relative to the horse side. Cause that's really where the action was. And you know, that, like I said, I mean, it's hard to think of that now, but sports betting, I mean, it was popular amongst, you know, I'd say guys like us, you know, but you gotta remember back in, you know, go back in the day, horse racing, it was like horse racing, baseball, and boxing were the most popular sports in the country. And that's what people bet on. And that's they really didn't want you hanging around and watching a game. They wanted you to make your bet and get out of there. But the horse racing is a whole different thing. You were betting. And by the way, none of these races were on TV at the time. We all had, they had the wire. And if you ever watched the movie The Sting, it was very similar to that. That's the way we were getting horse results. But still, you know, the way the horses work, you're sitting now at the form and, you know, you're just betting throughout the course of the day. So that's the way those shops work. But the sportsbook didn't get into the casinos till, I want to say, 77, maybe 78, something like that. Probably 77, I think. But, again, somebody can look that up. And I think Roxy probably has that at his fingertips. But, right around there. So before then, the only time you could bet sports, this was by Nevada regulation, was in a standalone shop.
Wow. We won't bore people with the details, but a lot of it had to do with prohibitive taxes on sports. And then that got changed from 10% to 2%. People don't even know that a tax exists today that makes it a good deal for casinos to have sports books. Fascinating history. More adventures in bad bookmaking. And there's so many of them. Harrah's has its own wing. We'll get into some of that.
Yes, it does.
On a numbers game at VSiN right here with Chris Andrews. Exclusively on a numbers game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Story time, part three, right here at VSiN.
To a numbers game with Gil Alexander.
Back on a numbers game, as the man said, thank you, Ron Flatter. It is Gil Alexander from San Francisco, our satellite office in San Francisco, California. Chrissy Andrews joining us once again. The name of the book, Then One Day, 40 years in bookmaking in Nevada. And the reason it's called Then One Day is because when Chrissy would originally tell these stories on Story Time during Guessing Lines on the Beating the Book podcast, Invariably, every one of these stories would turn by Chrissy somewhere in the middle, giving some preamble and then saying, then one day, and everything's changed. Today, we're talking about bad bookmaking. We were talking off air about what this one is, and then you said a couple of things, and I'm like, I can't even decipher what that is. So you can go ahead and tell this real quickie.
Okay, this is Roxy was coming to Reno quite a bit, and you know, he and I were running buddies, and a lot of times he'd come to Reno. I make fun of him. I said, he used to be so broke he'd have to sleep on my couch. Let's just say Roxy's couch sleeping days are long gone. You know, but that was us. We were just trying to hustle. Yeah, he's done all right for himself. But we would leave in the morning, and, you know, try to get up to Lake Tahoe to make the first race at New York. And a lot of times, you know, we're, you know, typical guys. We just, you know, we were late. And so we would stop at Artichoke Joe's, which is this little place in Carson City, along the way up to Lake Tahoe. So we'd stop in at Artichoke Joe's, and we'd make our bets for like the first in New York, and then we'd, you know, hustle on up to the lake and, you know, finish our daily business, whatever we were going to do. Well, when we were going there, this is, again, this is back in the early 80s, probably like 81, 82, maybe a little later, maybe up to 83 or so. And guys that were around at that time know that NBA totals were moving like crazy. I mean, and not only moving like crazy, they were winning at an unbelievable clip. To say 60% is way undercutting what they were winning at. It had to be closer to like 70%. I mean, it was like money in your pocket every day. These things were moving. Anyway, we'd stop at Artichoke's, and Artichoke had what he called the coconut line. And what it was, a total, like let's say the total was 210.
Oh, coconut.
You had to bet. But I'll explain what that means in a second. So let's say the number was 210. So at Artichoke's, you had to bet over 214 or under 206.
Oh, man.
So you had an 8-point, and you're laying 11 to 10 both ways. And and that's what he said. You had to be coconuts to be betting into this number.
Well, now it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so now it makes perfect sense. So artichoke and coconuts, I don't know if that goes together, but it sure went together good for me and Roxy. So we went down the coconut line. Now, like I said, some of these games would move 7, 8, 10 points. So even though you were taking 4 points, kind of the worst right. bit off the opening number, it was still, I mean, what's 4 points? It's two buckets, you know? So we break down the artichoke line. And then on our way home, we had games that were moving 8, 10 points. Well, it was still worth it for us to go into Artichoke's and bet into the coconut line. And he'd look at us, oh, you guys are crazy. You guys know what you're doing? Oh, man. You know, he was thinking, look at these two bums coming in here and betting this. You know, we would bet it and, you know, obviously cut our percentage down a little bit, but not that much. We still, I mean, that was another gravy train that we had going for us. And we were up at the lake and had to be running back home, running back down the hill to get the artichokes by post time to bet into these numbers that we knew weren't going to move all day. He didn't move the number. He just felt like, the hell of it. I got an 8-point middle working for me. Plus the juice, I'll just go with that, which I'd say in this day and age would probably be pretty good. But in that day and age, wasn't all that good if you knew what you were doing. And me and Roxy took pretty good advantage of it. That was a lot of fun.
Jeez. And how quickly did it take you to realize, like when you first saw that line, you must've been like, oh my God, this is terrible. But then you quickly figured out, oh, he never does anything with it. We could still get the best of this number, even because of the manner in which it moves all day long, even though he thinks he's killing people with this.
Yeah. Well, it didn't take us long, believe me. It took us maybe one or two trips to Artichoke's when we realized he doesn't move the number. The number just sits there all day. And I mean, he would even tell you that. He'd tell you that himself. Yeah, I'm not going to move the number. And the Artichoke's was kind of place, like I said, we'd bet the first race in New York or whatever. And, you know, when we'd go like the next day or next week to cash our ticket, he didn't ring up your ticket and says, okay, pays, you know, $200. He had the $200 in an envelope in the drawer.
Artichoke Joe's and the coconut line. I don't even remember that story. That's how many of these there are. Yeah. Adventures in Bad Bookmaking, coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is A Numbers Game, once again, right here on VSiN, the biggest stats and information network, Sirius XM channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app. Fubo Sling and Game Plus is Gil Alexander from San Francisco. Chris Andrews, the author, of course, of Then One Day, 40 Years of Bookmaking in Nevada, with story time, telling some of the stories from days gone by, specifically what we used to call adventures in bad bookmaking, which, again, those of us who weren't around, we can only dream of what that must have been like. But you were smart enough to take advantage of it. I mean, it wasn't like everybody figured out these things, and you have another example of that.
No, it was a hell of a gravy train back then, I got to tell you. So here's another one. You know, so back in the day, kids, pay attention. We didn't have cell phones or even beepers, nothing like that. So
what?
I was running from Uncle Jack. Yeah, I know. So I was running from Uncle Jack. So I'd stop by like on a Sunday morning, let's say. And, you know, he'd give me like, he gave me quite a bit of money. And he'd say, okay, here's what I'm looking for. And he'd give me a list. He says, don't bother calling me. If you see these numbers, just go bet them and then call me later. Tell me what I got. Okay. And I take like whatever, you know, whatever they take, whatever the limit is, you could bet. Okay. So one day, I'm on my journeys. I go to Sam's Town. Now on my list that day, and I think it was the Monday night game. I'm not sure if we had Sunday night football then or not. I don't think we did. Anyways, Chargers are playing the Raiders. So he gave me Raiders -2.5 or the Chargers +4. So obviously the number was pretty much three painted on everywhere.
Wow.
So I walk in, they got the Raiders -2.5. So I run up to the counter and they, you know, stand in line, everything else, Sunday morning. And I say, give me the Chargers -2.5 for 5,000. Okay. Guy writes the ticket. This guy I kind of knew a little bit. So I go and look. They don't change the number. I go and call my Uncle Jack. I said, well, I got you the Chargers or the Raiders -2.5 for 5,000. He says, well, they move it? No. Well, go bet them again. So I go to the same guy. I go up to the front. I said, you know, I already bet you Chargers Raiders -2.5 for 5,000. If you didn't move it, I'm going to bet it again. He says, hey, they didn't move it. You're entitled to bet it again. I bet it again. I'm sitting there. They don't move it. I call my Uncle Jack back. He says, did they move it? I said, no. He says, well, go bet them again. So I get back in line. Again, go to the same guy, lay the 2.5 for 5,000. You know, and I tell him, I said, if you're not going to move it, I'm just going to keep betting. He says, well, he'll probably move it now. But they haven't moved it, so you're not doing anything wrong. You're fine. Okay. So I go, and I look back, and about a minute later, they did move it. Not the three. Not even the 3.5. They move it to 4. So I call my Uncle Jack back. I said, yeah, they finally moved it. He says, and he could tell by my voice. He says, what'd they do? Did they move it to 3.5? I said, no. They moved it to 4. You're kidding. No. He says, well, go take the 4. I said, okay.
What are you calling me for?
I
bet it.
Yeah, I run up. I just wanted to make sure, you know. So I run up. I take the 4 again, like in the same window, same guy. You know, I take the 4 for 5,000. And I call my Uncle Jack. I said, yeah, because now I'm good. Go on to the next stop. I'm right where I want to be on that game. Okay. And like I said in the book, well, I even have to tell you the final.
Yeah,
Raiders
of course.
24, Chargers 21. And later on, I had one of those guys working for me, and he told me about that game in particular. You know, the guy was like just a ticket writer at Samsung at the time. And like the boss called him back and says, hey, I want you guys to look at this game. This is how you book a game. This is how you book a game. And so they had like, you know, a ton of action on both sides. Yeah, we can't lose. We got a ton of action on both sides. Everything's perfect. And my guy tells him, not if the Raiders win by 3. He goes, what are you talking about? Well, if the Raiders win by 3, it ain't going to be so good. And he puts in like the what-if score, and oh, my God, they were going to lose a fortune. Because I wasn't the only guy betting. You know? And naturally, that's exactly what he came. 24-21.
Of course.
Of course it did.
Three, of course, being the most common result in an NFL game or landing on a margin of 3. But so, again, with all of these, I'm curious, when did you realize, like, how do you remember the preamble? Do you remember the talk before where you're like, hey, like, when this guy moves something, he doesn't just move it like that. He moves it massively. Like, do you remember that conversation? Like, how was that figured out?
Not at all. Not at all, because in my early days, when I first moved to Las Vegas, and now this, I didn't even put this in the book, but I swear to God, this is true. So I first moved to Las Vegas. So, I mean, I'm hustling around. I'm broke. I don't have any money. You know, so I run up to Sam's Town for the Monday night game, and it's like about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And I didn't put this in the book. I absolutely should have. I go up to Sam's Town because my mother, I was staying with my mother. She lived kind of towards that side of town. Run up to Sam's Town. It's like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I walk in. I go to bet the Monday night game. They have a number I like on the board, and I go to bet it. But Gil, like, I think I was betting 44 to win 40. That was my unit at the time. And he comes running. This guy, the boss, he comes running. No, we're not taking any more action on that game. We're booked perfectly. We're not taking any more action.
I said, booked perfectly.
What? Yeah. We're booked perfectly. I don't want to take any more action on that game. We're fine. Okay. Boy, this is the way the business was back then. You had some guys. How much time do we have left, Gil? Because I got another story with the same guy.
We got 90 seconds left, so we may want to wait for this one.
He was explaining to me the horses one time to figure out the extension. He says, well, if a horse pays $12, and you take a bet, you have to, it's this times two, because it's a $2 wager, subtract the two, that's how you figure your extension. I said, well, why don't you take the bet amount times the odds times 5? And he looked at me like I just taught him how to split the atom. I swear to God, he was like stunned. That, oh, this is the way you figure that out. Oh, yeah, that's. He was not the brightest bulb.
What year again was this all, just for context?
79, 80.
Wow. Man, a different era. Yeah. Can you tell the hard to explain Super Bowl parlay story next? Can you do that for us?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
This one will require a little bit of explanation, I believe. But Super Bowl parlays, adventures in bad bookmaking, coming up. Again, the name of the book. Then One Day, 40 years of bookmaking in Nevada. It is our friend Chris Andrews, who runs the South Point Hotel Casino Sportsbook. That book available everywhere, including, of course, at Amazon. Check that out. More stories coming up. Bad bookmaking. Love that. Right here on The Numbers Game at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is Gil Alexander, and it is Chris Andrews, kind enough to spend another couple hours with us this morning. Part 3 of Story Time, the cold version, the back-to-back-to-back-to-back version of Story Time. Chrissy, this one requires a bit of an explanation, but we're all ears. Let's hear it. Super Bowl parlays, I believe, is what you call them.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what year this was, but whatever Super Bowl was, the number was right around Pick'em. And I think the total was 48. So I'm not positive what year this was, but it's kind of a legendary story up in Northern Nevada. So this was Harrah's up at the lake. Now, between the lake and Reno, and the downtown Reno, they ran their books completely independent of one another. So what you found at one would not necessarily be what you found at the other one. Anyway, so up at the lake, they put out a parlay card for the Super Bowl. And on it, so it was every quarter was like Pick'em on this parlay card. So there was no real advantage there. Maybe a slight, but not really much. But they had the totals on every quarter, on both halves, and for the game. So I'm not sure exactly what the totals were, but I'm pretty sure I know close. So the first quarter total was 10. Second quarter total was 14. Third quarter total was 10. Fourth quarter total was 14. First half total was 24. Second half total was 24. And the game total was 48. Now, all those numbers individually are the right numbers. And that they put out that card like that, and they thought, well, you know, we got the right numbers on the parlay card. We're fine. Now, after about a day or so, after they put the card out, they start getting, like, just an inordinate amount of play on the card. And it just kept streaming in, streaming in, streaming in. And finally, somebody up there figured it out. If I bet over 10 the first quarter, and I bet over 10, over 14 the second quarter, and I bet over 24 for the half, the first quarter comes over 10, and the second quarter comes over 14, then the half is definitely going to come over 24.
Mm-hmm.
You know, conversely, you bet the other way. If you go under 10 the first, under 14 in the second, the first half is going to go under 24.
Right.
So what you were doing, and that's about the lowest denominator, you could bet a two-teamer, essentially, and get paid for a three-teamer. So a two-teamer pays, what, 13 to 5? And a three-teamer pays 6 to 1. So that was a hell of a bargain. Now, it doesn't mean you have to win. First quarter could go over, second quarter could go under, and then you're going to blow the parlay because it all has to line up. But you could do it for the game, too. First half goes over 24. Second half goes over 24. The game's going to be over 48. Again, conversely, the other way. You bet under 24 for the first half, under 24 for the second half. The game is going to be under 48. And they were taking just so much money on this and really had no idea what they were doing. They didn't realize what was going on because they were looking at each number individually. And each number individually, like I said, was pretty much the right number within maybe half a point or something like that.
Each quarter
maybe
number.
Some juice involved.
Yeah.
Each quarter number, both halves numbers, and the game total number. They were all solid numbers.
Right.
So, guys, I just gave you an example of a three-teamer, but guys were betting, like, you know, up to a six-teamer. You bet first quarter over, second quarter over, third quarter over, fourth quarter over, game over. You know, well, that's a five-team. You know, but I mean, no, but oh, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. They throw in the halves too. You know, first quarter over, second quarter over, half over. Yeah, so you could bet up to like an 8-teamer, I guess. Is that right? Or a 16, whatever it is. They were putting together every combination you could figure out.
Yeah.
17. So, I mean,
and this,
back
and just to
then,
be clear, and just to be clear, this didn't have to be a Super Bowl. This could have been any game, and it would have been a terrible bet to offer.
And yeah, it would have been a terrible bet under any circumstances.
That's
this
right.
This happened to be the Super Bowl. So they were under like the false, what's the word? I mean, you know, like they thought everything was fine. There's a word I'm looking for. I can't think of it right now. They were under the false impression that everything was just hunky dory. They were just, they hit on this thing that was going to create so much action. And it was just so popular. They really struck gold with this thing and were doing so much business. And finally, somebody figured it out. And I remember the guy who I hope he's still alive. He's a very good writer. Wrote for the Reno Gazette Journal, Steve Steden. And, you know, Steve and I had a pretty good relationship. And I remember Steve called me. He says, you know, he didn't understand. And it's one of those things where, like, if you're not kind of in the business like we are, you could look at it and it's not the easiest thing to understand unless, you know, probably most of our listeners, I would say, probably understand what I'm talking about. But like, you know, Steve was a writer, you know, he wasn't really a bettor or anything like that. And he had me explain to him. And then, it was like I explained to him how to split the atom. Like, I was like, oh my God. He goes, are you kidding me? They didn't. He says, do you mind if I write that? I said, Steve, I don't mind if you write it. Don't use my name. You know, just, you know, you talk to, you know, whoever, however you want to identify me is fine, but don't use my name and don't tell them, you know, what position I'm in at the time. And
it's
don't, you know, I was going to say, I think in the line I put in the book was, the old saying is God looks after drunks and fools. And I would never accuse the Harris people of being drunks. And don't you know, it split out perfectly. you know, like first quarter went over, second quarter went under, so they blew that, you know, like first half, you know, I'm just making this up, but I know it's split up. Yeah. First half went over, second half went under, and, you know, quarters, nothing really aligned, you know, nothing really came in. So all these guys, you had way, way, way the best of it. And like I said, if you gave guys like that, that kind of, that kind of bargain, that, you know, I mean, just, you know, the monetary value of something like that is astronomical. And especially if they were taking big action, it being the Super Bowl, and they got lucky, and things did not correlate, and they wound up pulling the card once they figured out what was going on. They wound up taking the card off. But, you know, the other, and it's kind of weird the way the lake was at the time up at Lake Tahoe. And again, this is a very different, you know, the whole industry is so much different, but there was like a pretty good wise guy community up at the lake. And a lot of them were, you know, kind of making a living off sports betting, you know, back in the day. You know, you get, like I said, you'll go over some of these stories here. You see, it was not a very well-run operation. In the book, The Adventures in Bad Bookmaking, Harrah's themselves have a whole chapter to themselves because of some of the stupid things that they did. This was way up there. And like I said, they skated on this one. They danced around all the numbers. And next year, obviously, they didn't have it. But I talked to one of the guys that was in there, and you know, the powers that be, you know, the board of directors, the bosses, said, "Oh my God, you guys did a great job. This is beautiful. Oh, we're gonna do it again next year, right?" And they go, we decided no. And they didn't want to fess up to how stupid they were. They were trying to tell the bosses how bright they were, how brilliant they were. So that was the one chance we had at that sort of thing.
Yeah, Chris, because as you're telling this story, I did a little, just a little Googling. Could this have been the Super Bowl in January of 1982? So after the 1981 season, because that was the first Niners-Bengals Super Bowl in Pontiac, Michigan, where the total was 48, and I believe the Niners were favored by one. Could that have been it? Sounds like your numbers.
It sounds like it. I think actually... yeah, that very well could be it. And I think the Niners were. And by the way, I took my Uncle Jack when he came up to visit me. We went up to the lake while he was there, and the Niners were pretty much one everywhere. Is that what you were Googling right there?
Well, that was the closing anyway.
Yeah, that was a close. Yeah, and again, everybody got it. Well, you know, we got in this discussion yesterday talking about certain numbers in NCAA championship games. These numbers are not. There's not a union. You know, there's not one number. But I remember taking Michael Jack. We took a ride up to the lake, and you know, that too, they didn't know him or anything like that. They put him on for $100,000 on the Bengals plus four on a game that was won. And of course, he didn't cash. The Niners beat him. You know, but
Niners beat him by five. By the way, they won by five. So
Niners
barely...
beat him by five. Yeah. Took four. Yeah. One of those. But I would say, yeah, they probably were thinking we are the smartest bookmakers in the world here. You know, after between that parlay card, putting my uncle on for $100,000. You know,
that was probably the game. If it was in fact that game, the first quarter was Niners 7-0. The Niners then outscored the Bengals 13-0 in the second quarter, for those who remember that game. So it was 20-0 at halftime. The Bengals outscored the Niners 7-0 in the third quarter, but here's probably what saved Harrah's if it was in fact this game. Fourth quarter, Cincinnati 14, Niners 6. So that would have completely destroyed any correlated if you know anything correlated if people had included the fourth quarter. But yeah, so what was the line? God protects drunks and fools, and I would never accuse Harrah's of being drunks. It's great, just one of the great lines. By the way, that's the underrated.
I'm not sure that's the game, but it might be. It's right. It might be that. You know, you know, it's right there. But yeah, I'm not. I couldn't swear to that. That being that game, but that is what happened. And they got lucky. They skated, and I'm sure they were thinking that they were the sharpest bookmakers in the world. I think they sold themselves to their bosses that they were the sharpest, but they knew that they screwed up.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to do this next year. We thought about it. We're just not going to do it to their bosses.
Yeah.
Coming back, more adventures in bad bookmaking with the great Chrissy Andrews. right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the sports betting network.
Attention all homeowners in jeopardy of foreclosure. If you owe more on your home than it's actually worth, have missed one or more mortgage payments, have been denied a loan modification, or are facing foreclosure for any reason, you must listen to this message. A toll-free mortgage relief hotline's been established for anyone having their home lost in foreclosure. Just call 888-497-1876. And see if your home qualifies. We can help stop your home from going into foreclosure or even get your home out of foreclosure. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have faced foreclosure in the past year alone. This foreclosure defense group has helped thousands of people just like you fight the foreclosure process so they can stay in their homes. But you must call 888-497-1876 now to qualify. The call and information are absolutely free and the help is real. Don't lose your home. Call the Mortgage Relief Hotline now at 888-497-1876. That's 888-497-1876. 888-497-1876.